one of the reasons we do cord killers is so that we can have all the devices set up, all the services set up, so we don't have to think about that stuff anymore and watch things. And that's what this show is about. Spoiler in time is us watching things and talking about those things we watched. I'm Tom Merritt. He's Brian Brushwood.
Heck yeah. And joining us in studio, we got Roberto Villegas, who many of you may recognize as the voice of the Movie Draft Minute. Oh, wait, what's that? The Movie Draft? Maybe we should check in and find out how the Winter Movie Draft is doing. Perfectly smooth. Nailed it.
Totally. No one's going to notice.
Notice.
They're going to be like, wait, we're talking about the Movie Draft? Well, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. And so, $477 million for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, which I believe is now starting to slow down, puts DTNS on top at $628 million. I don't know that that's enough. And I'm fairly certain if it wasn't enough, Amityville, The Awakening, and Resident Evil, The Final Chapter wouldn't be enough to push us over the top. Brian, am I crazy?
Tom, I am looking right now at reddit.com/r/diamondclub to see if I can find the Movie League. Mike put out an extra missive where he said not only like Justin and I were gossiping, and he said not only was I not going to win, but that I wouldn't get within $25 million of winning, and or $24.5 million or whatever. Then he broke down all the numbers. I kind of think I might win, like, by the numbers that I saw from Movie League Mike.
What do you think your...
Who tends to be pretty good at this stuff. It's amazing.
What do you think you're like? Who's your champions then?
Logan, okay, for sure. Yeah. Keep in mind, Logan is in that space where it's technically in the winter movie draft. It's practically the first summer movie release.
And it looks pretty strong. When I went to Rogue One, I saw the trailer for it. It looks really intriguing as a Wolverine movie.
Keep in mind, my second movie was Sing. Like, what do I have right now? Two movies out, and I'm at $334 million.
Right.
I don't know, Tom. I think I might win.
You have six movies to go.
Yes.
And $300 million, less than $300 million to catch up.
Yes.
That means an average of $50 million per movie.
That's actually pretty
eminently doable.
Yeah. I was gonna say that's doable.
Sing has made $214 million and I paid $15 for it.
Best buy of the draft so far.
Rogue One has made $477 million, so a little more than double, and you paid $76 for it.
Fifth best buy in the draft.
I think I might win.
I think you're gonna win.
I think I'm gonna win. You're gonna win.
And I'm gonna blame trolls. Which is the number two buy in the draft.
Oh, I thought you meant the online people who were criticizing your picks.
Got it.
Right on.
Out this week. Amityville is apparently out, but we don't have numbers on it yet. The Comedian, which is Christy Cates' movie, is coming out this week.
Yeah. Milango, Christy Cates, Mikey Newman. I'm real excited for them to learn the game.
Oh my God. What a bird.
Wow. Gets a whiff of first place and just starts casting aspersions.
I'm so sorry, guys. I'm so sorry, guys.
I'm going to clip this out and I'm going to send it to the Christy Cates and Milango.
No.
I'll be honest. If Rogue One does not carry me to the win, I blame everyone else but you. Like, when I put the money on Rogue One, I'm like, $76. This is great. Like, everything else is going to divide up. And there's so much money left on the table that if people had in fact bid against you to keep you from getting all those movies, I think I would easily win.
Yeah, no, Costco, this is the winter of Costco, Brian, for sure.
Yeah,
$50 among everybody that was not spent.
Yeah, that was just on the table. And that all went to Brian. All right. Let's look at our triage. This is where we get some feedback from folks about stuff we've talked about in the past. So if you haven't watched Westworld, you might want to hold off for this email. We got this email who said, I binged Westworld and I'm going back to Spoiler in Time for your discussion, which is a great thing to do.
I love that idea, right? The idea that somebody waited to watch it all straight through. And then as they're going through, watch an episode, listen to us talk about it. Love it.
It says, I'm only halfway through where you guys got in an argument about whether you cared about the characters. For all I know, by the end of the season, you both may have reversed your opinions in this matter, but I needed to comment on this because it's my biggest problem with the show. To keep it short, it sounds to me like Tom was arguing charisma and Brian was arguing attachment. I loved Bernard. I liked Dolores and Billy a lot. I found many of the characters interesting, but I wasn't attached to a single one of them.
Yes.
Lost was the perfect show for Brian to bring up. The show was all about the characters. Heck, it spent half its time in flashbacks and flash forwards following one character at a time.
Dude, 100%. I had not recognized the distinction between the two, but reading those words just made my day, because you're right. I think Bernard was a very, very interesting character, very likable. Dolores I liked and all that stuff, you know, Billy and so on. But did not feel pained when any one of them, well, and, you know, spoilery, we don't know exactly when, where we'll see others of them at any point, but I was not attached to them. Like, you know, like he says, yes. And Lost. Like, I felt a real loss when some of them were not in my life anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a great explanation of it. Also, we've got a couple emails about Rogue One. And of course, with Roberto alongside, who has just seen Rogue One, yes. I figured it was a good time to revisit it. Alan Char said, I saw it twice, but I liked it more the second time than the first, unlike me. He said, I should start out by saying I'm not that deep of a Star Wars fan, so I didn't have the fond nostalgia. On the other hand, I had a lot of trouble with the shift in tone, the ensemble nature of the cast, and how that made it difficult to really get to know any particular person. The second time around, I'd come to terms with all that so I could enjoy the movie for what it was trying to do. Although I agree the execution was spotty, I kind of think of it as the Magnificent Seven or Six, where everyone dies at the end.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's not bad. I can, again, as we discussed in our kind of spoilery discussion of it, and I guess we're going to move into spoilers for that now. You know, I give it an A++ for ambition and for effort on and for daring to do things I would never expect to see in a Star Wars movie. I give it a C- for execution.
So what I liked about Rogue One, and I realized it as I was done with it, is it was a Star Wars movie that wasn't a Star Wars movie. The issues I've had with Force, when it came to Force Awakens, I'll put it this way. I realize I'm not the biggest fan of Star Wars. I'm more of a Star Trek guy in general. I have been for a while, but I've always at least acknowledged Star Wars as its cultural touchstone, that there's certain things about it that have interesting stories, you know, the hero's journey and things like that.
Do you like the movie reboots of Star Trek less than the TV show?
I'm definitely a big fan of TNG and some other stuff. There are certain things I you know, if you want to talk about Star Wars, we could go
into the title. Yeah, sorry, don't want
to. But when it came to Force Awakens, the one thing that always kind of bugged me about it was that it almost felt like, let's make a New Hope except for this new audience. I understand on a business sense why they did it. I understand on a thematical sense why they did it. But for me, as a guy that's, you know, watched New Hope many times, I go, I can go watch it again. I have no problem watching that movie again and experiencing that all over, sort of thing. When it came to Rogue One, what I enjoyed about it was, one, it didn't feel like a Star Wars film. The only thing that kept pulling me out, ironically, was every moment they referenced Star Wars. Every cameo in that pulled me out, especially when Darth Vader came on screen and did his one-liner, if you will.
Yeah. We talked about how he washed out of the O. Henry pun off and is the world's worst punster. It's funny to hear you say it didn't feel like a Star Wars movie to you, because I felt like they went out of their way to like not bother to invent a single damn new thing in all of this.
No,
let's make sure. Let's make sure they're AT-ATs and AT-STs.
For sure, they played with
characters we know.
And as weird as it sounds, like I think Red Letter Media's review, because you know, for me, I waited until I watched the movie before I started seeing.
Yeah, sure. You're talking about they're half in the bag.
Yeah, they're half in the bag.
Yeah.
Where they basically said it. You know, it's one of the greatest fan films ever, and I will agree. It is definitely a film that it is. It's here's Star Wars universe. Let's play with the toys.
Correct. It makes up nothing new.
Right. No, and I think that's why what I enjoyed about it was, for me, it was at least an attempt at trying something different. trying something at least.
Again, commend the effort.
Right.
Did not.
But the other point they made in the review that I'm kind of curious to hear both of you two, especially you, Brian, because you're and Tom, since you're both big Star Wars fans. The one comment made was that the Star Wars universe is very limited in what you can do story-wise.
That is not true.
Okay.
That is true to the extent that you believe it is true. Truthfully, the Star Wars universe is literally defined as limitless.
Right.
It is a sure. galaxy far away. You can do magic. You can do sure, sorcery. Totally. You can do religion. You can do you got wizards. You got warriors. You got paladins. You got royalty. There's nothing you can't do in the Star Wars universe, which is why I get so mad with the world's biggest sandbox that we get to see exactly three set pieces, desert place, cold place, swampy place, and three different types of characters, old wizard, warrior, jaded, and princess.
Well,
That's all there is.
The last time we tried something new.
It's all of the galaxy is three star systems wide and three characters tall.
I guess because the thing is, like, the last time we tried something daring new, and whether you like it or not, was happened to be about politics and trade negotiations and this really lush water planet.
Do you know how much I love you, Roberto? So I'm going to do you the honor of pretending you never just said that.
I'm just saying that's the business. That's what's interesting about the business side of things. But regardless of that, I definitely enjoyed Rogue One because of the fact that it didn't have some of those trappings. That being said, it does make me excited for a little bit for Episode 8 in that I hope they kind of take that same sort of direction. Not necessarily tone, but just like trying something different.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought for like a half second we were actually going to get a story independent of all the other stories.
I get what you're saying.
And we didn't.
No, it definitely was.
It was the story. Here's the problem, I think, for Brian. They chose to tell the story of how the Death Star plans were stolen, which locks them into a small corner of this universe.
Yes.
And you're going to have the same problem with Han Solo's story, because it has to be about Han Solo.
Yeah.
They're not going out into those wider regions and telling new stories with these.
That's true. And
wouldn't it be great? We were joking about this after Weird Things, talking about it's like, oh, well, I never lose at Sabacc. I'll even bet my ship. You know, it's the century bird of prey until someone wins it and renames it. I don't know. I want to see something. I loved the books in the expanded universe so much. I want to see them do that. And I felt like they got a pass on The Force Awakens because they needed to essentially do a press release saying, hey, we're getting everything on track. Don't worry about it. This was their opportunity to tell a different story, and they didn't tell a different story.
I'll give you that. I will say of where it suffered from the idea of like, well, we got to fit this story in between these events. And so it had a lot of those weird moments for sure. But I
just to be clear in your emails, I liked it a lot better than those two. We got another email. Jyn Erso being reimagined by someone who wrote into cordkillers@gmail.com. They write, Jyn Erso, what if she was a prominent humanitarian who helped underserved communities? The rebels kidnap her and force her to make contact with her estranged father, whom she hates because he manufactures weapons. She points out how the extremist faction of rebels are hypocrites and no better than the Empire. Meanwhile, Cassian Andor shows her that all food and medicine she distributed to the needy was actually stolen from conquered worlds. In order to survive their first mission, they learn that both violence and negotiation are sometimes the best option. They then unite the militaristic and diplomatic factions of the Alliance to enact a desperate plan to steal the schematics of the Death Star.
I love this idea of what if we saw the seduction of somebody in, and maybe they intentionally didn't do it because there are similar themes with The Force Awakens, you know, what's his name? He talks about, you know, he's called by the light and so on. But I would have loved to have seen somebody who thinks that the Empire is doing a good thing and just, you know, she's working within the system. Hey, what can you do? I'm just in the Peace Corps here at the Empire trying to, you know, get bottled water out to all these natives.
I hate the arms manufacturers, but not everyone in the Empire is an arms manufacturer, right?
Like, yeah, right, right. Like, I think that would have been really, really fun. I think I would have liked that a lot.
All right, let's move on to Sherlock, which has premiered. Now, I know episode 2 of this new season came out yesterday. Neither Brian or I have watched it, and we are kind of catching up from the holiday break. So we're just going to talk about the first episode of Sherlock back. And you better be out if you haven't watched it yet, because this is the one where Mary dies.
Okay. Yeah, spoiler alert.
I mean, called Spoiler in Time.
It is called Spoiler in Time, but do you know what I thought? First of all, I had so much fun watching this episode. I really enjoyed the fact that stylistically, it was all over the map. Like, at one point, a bloodhound has, wacky chemical signatures flying around its head as it smells, different hemoglobins and whatever. I love the fact that they just cut to a vignette of a 4-person assassin squad, and then all of a sudden, 1960s mod squad style, it chops off sections and gives names and points arrows, all this stuff. Loved all of that, and can't believe I didn't see it coming a mile away, but what it reminded me the most of is that brief period during Battlestar Galactica, the Ronald D. Moore reboot. What was the name of the ship that wasn't the Galactica that, like, they ran into and then they were all like, oh, here's another ship. Well, and the whole time you're watching it, you're thinking
that special episode, too.
Yeah. The whole time you're thinking like, well, I mean, they can't, Battlestar Galactica, they can't have two ships.
Right.
But then they end the season and you're like, son of a bitch, they have two ships? Oh, wow, how much fun. They have two ships and they're different ships and they do different things. And it's really, Pegasus. Really cool. The Pegasus. Pegasus. That's right, the Pegasus,
Thank
right?
Thank you, CRBC killer.
That's how I felt about Mary. And I got seduced. I got suckered in. I'm like, how much fun. It's a triad. It's three guys as a team. Oh, this is awesome. And then I'm like, oh, no, of course you have to blow up the Pegasus because, it's called Battlestar Galactica. And
that's canon from the Arthur Conan Doyle stories as well. You kind of knew that. I mean, they could have chosen to go differently.
Sure,
right?
Sure,
you don't really know, but you're like, I wonder if she's going to survive this time.
If that matters, then that's great. But I really was sad. I was really sad that they blew up the Pegasus.
I had a problem with this episode. It was okay. I found myself drifting and not paying attention, and I just felt like it was 90 minutes of an episode that was probably 45 minutes long. Because the stuff about Mary, I found super compelling. I liked the new stylistic elements too. I was entertained by those, but there were stretches where I just felt like it was ambling, not even rambling, just ambling. I'm like, I know where you're going next. I've seen Sherlock before. Like, this isn't like the first episode where I'm getting to know these characters.
I don't know, man. Like, those moments when he's getting ramped up and he's constantly tweeting and he's tweeting behind his back at the confirmation, or for the baptism of the kid and whatnot. And the fact that he's like, he's getting back on the horse of solving mysteries. And so he's just like, right thumb, not left thumb. Don't say twins, this, that, the other. And just like giving nothing but punchlines to mysteries. Loved, loved, loved all of that.
That part isn't what I'm talking about so much as the other situation where they're slowly unveiling the guy who has a grudge and wants to kill Mary because he didn't. And I don't even remember what the grudge was about.
I didn't mind that because I felt like they did a good enough job of psyching us out to make us think like what's the one thing we didn't want this episode to immediately be about is Moriarty. So they psyched us out and it wasn't Moriarty. Happy.
Yeah, I don't mind so much that they basically just said, oh, it's going to be Moriarty. No, it's not. We're never going to deal with that because I know they do that. They always have a MacGuffin that they're going to string out until the final episode. But again, I kind of knew that was going to happen. So I wasn't even on the edge of my seat like, oh, are they going to get to the Moriarty thing? I was sort of immediately like, the Moriarty thing is the MacGuffin. Got it. Okay.
Speaking of which, I loved the recurring bit of him pretending not to know who Margaret Thatcher was the entire time. That was amazing to me.
Well, pretending.
I mean, or possibly not knowing or whatever.
I think Sherlock may not. I mean, that is something they haven't gone to that well as often, which is Sherlock just being unaware of current events.
Yeah. Anyway, Blender MF in the chat says that episode one was an all right episode, but he says episode two he loved, which has me very, okay. very excited. I can't wait to watch it. But I really, really enjoyed it. In fact, I'm probably going to watch it again with Bonnie. Like, I liked it that much. I liked it an awful lot. And I can't tell how much of it is me having an appreciation for these iterations of the characters. Like you know, just I could watch a whole episode of just Mycroft doing his thing. I could watch a whole episode of just Mary taking care of the baby or whatever. What was up with the flirtation of extramaritalness? That was
also a part that just didn't pay off. I thought, this is going to be a one little bit of Moriarty here is he's going to have manipulated this woman to manipulate Watson, and it just ends up fizzling out. Like, Mary doesn't even find out about it.
Well, and also they didn't get close to justifying. I mean, there are men I read about who are so taxed upon having a kid or whatever that they find themselves emotionally drained, and they look for someone to kind of refill their emotional bank account outside of their marriage, and that's how that stuff happened. I didn't feel any of that. I didn't feel like he was hungering for any of that. You know what I mean?
No, I felt like the woman was persistent enough to cause him to pay attention where he would have absolutely ignored, but why he ended up engaging in it later was unexplained to me.
I agree. And man, forgive me after I just praised it. What was the point of all that again? She was important. Why?
Apparently, CRBC Killer in the chat room says she's important for future episodes.
Yeah, right. So there you go. Dumb. All right. Okay.
So I was a little bit bored. I didn't think it was awful, but I was a little bit bored by this one. So I'm glad to hear that the next one is being praised by lots of people, because I hope it brings me back in, because I do love these characters.
Yeah. Well, you're not kidding, man. The characters and the execution of them is just amazing. Just fantastic. Yeah. Can't say enough about them.
All right. Let's get to season 4, episodes 11, 12, and 13 of Justified. I know that's a lot to throw at you. If you've only watched one or two, you might want to duck out, because we are going to talk about all three of them, and I can't guarantee that we'll be able to keep the separate episodes.
Man, I'll tell you what, it's going to be like we're waking up from we had a wonderful dream last night, and we're doing our best to remember the favorite parts that we had. And let me just say, the one scene that stands out to me, the best of the whole thing, I mean, number one, the fact that they have a character called YOLO. Number two, the fact that Patton Oswalt turns out to be made of sterner stuff than we ever would have dared hope. That was a great scene. I loved all that.
I'll be honest. Each one of these episodes felt like a season finale to me.
Okay.
Except maybe the last one. The actual season finale almost felt like episode one of a new season.
Yeah, it felt like they were setting up. I thought for sure. Forgive me. Drew gets away, right, on a train. Is that what it is?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't know. You remember? Crap. Now I'm gonna have to actually look at the show notes, because I'm a bad person. But they make a comment at some point. They're like, "Oh, you could set your watch by the fact that the train always leaves at this time from the coal mine."
In the previous episode, yeah, not in episode 13.
Correct.
This is how they smuggle him out of the high school.
Correct. Which, by the way, I did like that set piece. I like the idea of the high school, of the place that has history for Boyd Crowder and for Raylan.
Yeah, I like Raylan and Boyd talking about, remember when that astronaut came?
Yep. I thought that was all really clever, but I'm remembering this right. Like, Drew just full-on gets away, right?
No. He goes with Erica Dizel. I can't remember what's her character's name, but he gets on the train with her, and that's how they get her out of Harlan and back into custody. Because the next episode, he's in custody.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. Sorry.
He's trying to make a plea bargain for Ellen May.
Yes. Okay. Got it. I mixed up the order that I was remembering. Regardless, great set pieces. Enjoyed everything good question mark, I guess. I gotta be honest though, for how much everybody said they loved this season, I didn't feel it quite as much.
No, I'm not trashing on the season either, but this is not the season I came away from going, wow, now that was just like that. It felt like a bit of a wandering season, and certainly it picks up at the end when you have this fight out with Drew, and you have the sniper scene with Colton.
Oh, that was great. Circling the wagons and all that. Yeah, figuring out a way really to Molotov to set off all that. Again, it, collection of really good set pieces, but I wasn't in love with the character. I wasn't afraid of Drew. I didn't love him. It was a curiosity that he was under our noses the entire time. I got to tell you, Blondie McShooty Fist was, I love that. That was a supervillain that I could get by.
I do like the fact that Win Dixie, what's his name?
Win Duffy.
Win Duffy.
Win Dixie.
comes in at the end and basically says, hey guys, just letting you know I'll be in next season, because I do like that character.
Dude, yes. Well, and they've done a great job of the slow burn of building up to this moment where it's like, not only is he going to be in the series, he's going to be very, very good. He's going to be, I'm guessing, I haven't seen it yet, I think he's going to be a very credible, very sinister villain when the spotlight is on him.
And in this actual season finale, we have the first time we really see Raylan cross a line. Now, he only puts a toe over, arguably, but he allows Sammy's henchman to kill him or to kill, what's his face? Augustine. He allows them to kill him when he's present.
Yeah.
He knows gunfire is happening behind him as he's walking away, and he is duty bound to protect, even if he's suspended. He doesn't really get off from that responsibility, but he turns a blind eye to a murder.
It's the first time we've seen him really look an awful lot like Vic Mackey. Like, that's the kind of behavior we never would have even flinched at Vic Mackey doing, but
it's what you would expect from Vic Mackey.
Exactly, but it does feel very weird to see that from Raylan, for sure, which is interesting because, like, Breaking Bad was a character arc of somebody who started off we respected and like, who became reprehensible. Vic Mackey, you know, the Shield is the reverse, and it's somebody who's damned from the first episode, but you start to understand him a little bit more and what he's trying to do. Raylan, I don't know how to put into that paradigm, right? I mean,
he's a guy who's decided that his wife is worth more than his honor. Like, he's like, no, you don't. There are rules beyond the Marshall's rules, and you have crossed over them, and now you get what's coming to you.
I guess he's a bit like he's more like the archetype of Odysseus, right? Or Hercules. You know, he's that flawed, you know, he's a superhero. He's got his superpowers.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not above being too proud and having that hubris. I guess that's
going after his wife was it. Like, that pushed him over the line.
Yeah.
We also see Tim kill Colt. And it's both a revenge killing for Colt killing Tim's friend, but also justified because Colt was drawing down on him.
Yeah, I never loved Colt. Wasn't really engaged by him. Just seemed like another dope.
Not sad to see him go.
Well, it just didn't take. And I'm sure there'll be some other character that I'm deeply in love that won't take with you, and that's fine.
Yeah, of course. And then to finish off all the main characters, Boyd gets away. Like, he doesn't have any problems now with the Detroit Mafia because Augustine's gone. And he doesn't get caught disposing of the body they were trying to keep LMA from telling people about because Ava does. And Ava gets double-crossed. And Ava's going to jail now. And their dream of buying that house is over for the time being.
Yeah. If I believed any of those actions had real lasting consequences, I think I'd feel something more than I feel right now. But right now, I feel like we're 20 minutes away from
Well, ever since the judge made the new rule that ladies who are blonde get arrested for this crime get to come back as long as they want to get married right afterwards. And
that's how the law works.
I, you know what? I'll believe it when I see it.
So the last part of the episode shows Raylan plastering over the hole in Arlo's house, sitting on the porch, looking at the grave of Arlo. And I couldn't help but think they were trying to tell us, like, by crossing the line, Raylan at least thinks he's becoming Arlo.
He's that would not be an incorrect analysis. Like, he's more Vic Mackey, more a machine now than man, twisted and evil. I mean,
but I have the high ground.
I mean, it's a little bit. He's more Vic Mackey than I'm comfortable with. And I don't mind going to Vic Mackey territory if there's a point to it or a lesson to be taken away from it, but I'm not to this point really detected that they're trying to tell a deeper story along those lines.
If they are, we'll know pretty early in season 5, I guess.
Yeah. Still digging it. Season 4. Yeah. Do me a favor, everybody, write us, tell us, explain to me why season 4 was better than season 3. Cause even, I mean, season 3 definitely kicked season 4's ass, right?
For me, it did.
I mean, right.
Shooting McBlondfist.
I mean, dude, he was the best.
Yeah.
Taxi driver. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. We got 2 more seasons left. I will say one thing, and this is not a comparison of the quality of the two shows, but I definitely enjoy hearing the people in Justified chat more than The Shield.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's just something about the world they created that's more enjoyable to live in. Actually, and I think on purpose.
I disagree because, yes, I know you like the lazy kind of zingers that they just lay back and forth on each other on Justified. But, like, dude, like, I felt like every single person in the barn had a staff of writers ready with zingers every time they walked into a room. You know, they had
that's
new
the way
names.
We are in the southern part of the Midwest, Brian. That's just that we're all like that all the time.
Yeah, no, it's anyway, still enjoying
Eastern Kentucky, man. You just go there. They're like zig, zig, zig all day long. That's where all those writers came from.
Oh, no. I was saying in The Shield, the barn is what I meant.
Oh, like in the barn in The Shield. Yeah.
No. They were much faster on there. It was all,
well, yeah, because they're city folk.
Oh, I see. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just a simple country lawyer.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thank you, Roberto. I'm sorry if we bored you with our spoilers there at the end.
Not even fun. I'm now more intrigued on Shooty McBlondface than Waylon Dixon making a new show.
Waylon Dixon. He's great.
Remind people where they can find more of what you do.
Oh, I'm easy to find. Just hit me up on Twitter at Vincent404. If you just want to catch any podcasts I do my own, head to cosmicradio.tv.
Thank you, everybody, for watching. We'll spoil you next time.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.